fear, fearing fear, fearing fear. There's a siren screaming in my ear. Election days are colder when pushing from the rear is fear, fearing fear, fearing fear. And friends, I've never seen it quite so thick. Minds of clay are now of brick. Montana, Oklahoma, no, revolution is never near. With fear, fearing fear, fearing fear.
Hello, friends. This is Blaise Bonpain, and welcome to World Focus. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be. War is the treasure of Mr. Cheney and Mr. Bush. They seem to be able to talk about nothing else. Is anyone observing the fact that they are lying to the American people? Indeed, George says, doing nothing is not an option. But I would add, doing something is an option. There's an entire body of international law waiting to be exercised. Ignoring that law is not an option. Mr. Bush uses the phrase, we are going to deal with this man. Now that's the language of organized crime. He says, quote, our credibility is at stake. Indeed it is. The entire world, aside from little Tony Blair, has lost confidence in our leadership. These people in Washington seem to have a fetish about killing children. Mr. Rumsfeld wanted to go to war with Iraq immediately after 9/11. And look at the faces of the news anchors. They look like they are telling nursery rhymes to kindergarten children. Just how much will people prostitute themselves before they conclude it simply is not worth it? I know there's some talk about fascism, but let's not go there. Let's not have an abstract ideological discussion. Let's simply talk about the history of dictatorial practice in concrete terms. Aside from visiting Iraq, I've lived in many Latin American dictatorships. One of the clear characteristics of dictatorship is the use of warm slogans. For example, fatherland, family, and tradition. These are typical in the mix of dictatorial banter. How about homeland security? Now that one sounds like the jargon of Augusto Pinochet Ugarte in Chile in 1973. Let's look at the logic. Let's look at the semantics. How about the Patriot Act? That one would sound good in Haiti during the days of Papadoc Duvalier. It is designed to curtail civil liberties. What about arbitrary detention of people and their substantive disappearance? That sounds like Guatemala under Rios Montt. Homeland Security will close more medical centers in Los Angeles County. If it were truly security, it would insist on maintaining the 15 health centers that are closing. As it is, there will be countless preventable deaths in Los Angeles County alone. This is security? Friends, you must demand that your local legislators work for Homeland Security by demanding federal funds that have been stolen from health care. Don't let them cop out by saying that the money is not in their budget. They must demand the funds needed. They have been given a sacred trust and must perform on behalf of the citizens of Los Angeles County. The same demands must be applied to city councils and state legislatures and the governor. Homeland Security has become one of the great union-busting projects of all time. And speaking of union-busting, the president is speaking of using the reactionary Taft-Hartley law to break the strike of longshoremen in California. And what about federal troops to break strikes? That reminds me of Anastasio Somoza Garcia in Nicaragua. In dictatorships, the legislative branch of government is a live group of rubber stamps. Well, in dictatorships, the head of state usually becomes maniacal with power, drunk with power, to a point of psychosis. Well, well. American freedom and democracy cannot coexist with an imperial dictatorial presidency. Oh, yes, dictatorships have prisons full of people. We now have 25% of the prisoners of the world, and we only have 5% of the world's people. In dictatorships, the actual power is the military and its interests. The president is a front for a police state. At this time, our military has over half the budget of the United States. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be. I would suggest that Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Pearl, and Wolfowitz play video war games to satisfy their mania and that they stop endangering the people of the United States. Exactly what have any of them done for the people of the United States? Every year, poverty kills more people on this small planet than died in World War II. So let's not talk about the ideology of fascism. Let's talk about how dictatorial regimes conduct themselves. We are losing the good things of the United States because of malicious and incompetent leadership. It takes dialogue, collective genius, and goodwill to maintain a polity of justice and peace. Yes, a better world is possible. Well, then, how do we do it? We must change the way we think. First of all, the children are meant to be a privileged class. We must lavish the finest education on them together with the finest health care. The mentally and physically ill must also be part of a new privileged class. In order to do this, we have to reestablish the public sector, which has been under attack for decades. Yes, the public sector of schools, libraries, public health facilities, public utilities, public assistance for those who fall through the cracks. That's right, friends. The public sector is what made the United States livable. And let's say a good word for the performance of these public agencies. Social Security and Medicare have been administered for about 3% of their budget. No private health facility has ever accomplished that. The private sector can easily spend 50% on administration. We pledge to resist the warmongers, the hate mongers, the lie mongers, who are trying to attack one more destroyed country. Afghanistan was destroyed before we attacked. It is in a higher state of destruction now. Iraq has been totally destroyed by the United States since 1991. We bombed it 5 times last week, and we bombed it yesterday in one of the heaviest bombings since 1991. We have bombed it for 11 years together with a brutal child-killing embargo. What a disgrace to the people of the United States. Our economic system is in a state of collapse. We are incapable of delivering health care. The disabled are denied funds, and crass incompetents continue their psychotic babble about starting an entirely unnecessary war. What can we do? This will be a busy week. Join us today, Sunday, 3 p.m. at MacArthur Park, near Parkview in Wilshire, in a rally for justice and peace. Another world is possible. Join us every Friday from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Westwood Federal Building. Join us at Palisades Park in Santa Monica near the pier on Ocean Avenue at 6 p.m. on Wednesday, September 11th, for a vigil. And now some of that good music, and we want to speak to someone who has suffered through September 11th and affirm the life process. We're going to be speaking with Kelly Campbell right after this music.
Fear, fearing fear, fearing fear. Just look at any war and you will see. King Herod, Bosnia, 39 in Germany. In each their own time, in each their own gear. They had fear, fearing fear. Fearing fear. Buchanan, Duke, Gingrich, Limbaugh, Helms. Creeping like Freddy on streets of Helms. Stealing the wheel for a car they cannot steer. With fear, fearing fear, fearing fear.
I'm very happy today to be able to introduce to you Kelly Campbell, co-director, Western U.S. coordinator of the September 11th Families for Peaceful Tomorrows. Welcome, Kelly. Thank you for being on the air with us.
Thank you.
Kelly, you had a tragedy in your own family in 9/11 of 2001. And how did you deal with that?
Yes, on September 11th of last year, my partner's brother, my brother-in-law, Craig Amundson, was among those that were killed. Craig was working in the Pentagon and was married and had two young children who were 2 and 4 at the time. So for our family, it was a very devastating loss. He was a very young man, a gentle person, a goofy and kind family member and friend of mine for about 10 years. And it was a tremendous loss for us, a tremendous amount of grief in our family of dealing with Craig's death and how, looking at how we could respond to his death in a way that would bring about positive changes in the world, in a way that we could say, we don't want more suffering. What can we do to say we don't want more families ever anywhere on this planet to go through what we've just been through?
And then you determined to go to Afghanistan.
Yes, we joined together with other families of September 11th victims who were also speaking out, saying similar things, saying, not in my son's name, not in my brother's name, not in my family's name. And one of our first ideas was, what can we do to help the families in Afghanistan? This is after the bombing had started there. And our families, the families of September 11th, received so much compassion and so much love and support from people all over the world because our stories were told. There are things like the New York Times Portraits of Grief, which were really wonderful because it took this statistic, this sort of mind-numbing statistic of the people killed on September 11th and turned them into real, live human beings that people could relate to. But as the bombing started in Afghanistan, we knew that there would be Afghan families who were just like our families, people who were in the wrong place at the wrong time, who were bombed, who were injured, who lost their homes due to our military action. And our concern was, who's going to help those families? Who's going to reach out to them? And so in January, we were invited by Medea Benjamin of Global Exchange to visit Afghanistan to meet our sister families. And so I traveled along with three other people from our group who had also lost family members on September 11th to meet our Afghan sister families to try to tell their stories to the world and to see what we could do to raise awareness that innocent people are killed. This is the real face of war. This is what happens. And what do we do about it? How do we change the way we deal with conflict in order that other families don't suffer?
What did you find when you got to Afghanistan? Did you meet those families?
We did. We spent about 10 days in Kabul and in some villages immediately surrounding the Kabul area. And I personally met with over a dozen families who had their homes bombed by the United States. People who, women who were begging on the streets because their homes had been bombed and their husbands who were the breadwinners killed. We visited hospitals where there were children, wards full of children with landmine injuries left over from previous wars, and now supplemented with children who were there missing limbs due to our cluster bombs. Children telling stories of watching their friends and family members die as they picked up a cluster bomb or stepped on it, who are now 6 years old, 8 years old, missing a limb, sitting in a hospital. This is the true face of war. This is what happens when we bomb people. There, we met so many incredible people in Afghanistan. We met a woman who will be coming over this fall if we can get her visa to go through, whose home was destroyed, her husband and several of her children killed in a U.S. bombing raid. She then wrote a letter to the U.S. government, which a friend of hers translated into English, saying, "You've accidentally bombed my home. I know you didn't mean to do this. I know you didn't mean to kill my husband and children, but it happened. Now I have nothing. What can I do? Can you please help me? I know that America is my friend, and I'm asking for your help." She took her letter to the U.S. Embassy and was turned away at the gate, and they told her, "Go away, you're a beggar. We don't accept beggars at the U.S. Embassy.
I'm speaking with Kelly Campbell, the co-director and Western U.S. coordinator of September 11th Families for Peaceful Tomorrows. Kelly, if someone wanted to get in touch with your organization, is there a phone number they could call?
Yeah, the best way to get in touch with us right now is through our website, which
okay.
is www.peacefultomorrows.org.
www.peacefultomorrows.org.
And you can find our phone numbers and email addresses there. I also want to mention that Barry Amundson, my partner, and I will be in Los Angeles on September 10th at a gathering for civil liberties and peaceful tomorrows at the First Baptist Church.
Oh, that should be a great gathering.
Yeah, and if people want to come out to that, the number to RSVP is 323-852-9190. And we're also going to be showing our new video, Steps to Peace.
Oh, that's wonderful.
That chronicles our trip in Afghanistan as well as other events that people in our group have taken part in.
I do hope our listeners will listen to that. We're talking about September 10th at the First Baptist Church. That's just east of Vermont Avenue on 8th Street in Los Angeles, the First Baptist Church. This will be a great gathering, and Kelly Campbell will be there. And that number for them to call for information on that, Kelly?
It's 323-852-9190.
Wonderful. It's going to be a great gathering. That's this coming Tuesday night, the eve of 9/11 here in Los Angeles. Well, after your group visited the people in Afghanistan and you reassembled and dialogued about what you had seen, what were your conclusions?
Well, our conclusions were that we needed to call on our government to address this issue, that we want them to set up a fund to provide assistance to innocent families in Afghanistan who are suffering. So we've visited Congress several times. We've gotten some support there. Unfortunately, the Bush administration is not interested in addressing the issue of civilian casualties at all, although they have looked into it because, as one State Department official said, we have created a PR nightmare for them by telling these stories of the families in Afghanistan.
Well, I think it's a nightmare that had to come out. The truth will make us all free. And I know body counts are terrible, but it's very hard to get them. But we've been looking conservatively at 3,100 to 3,600 people that were directly killed in the impact of the bombings. These are civilians. And then indirectly, we see 19,000 to 40,000. Ultimately, a result of the recent war is approximately 50,000 innocent civilians that lost their lives in one way or another. And this is entirely unacceptable. The planet will not be able to sustain this kind of behavior. And of course, from a standpoint of morality, it is entirely immoral. So I'm just so grateful that you went there and became a witness to all of this yourselves. And I see the list of things that your Peaceful Tomorrows wants to do to make possible a safe, open dialogue on alternatives to war, to provide support and fellowship to others seeking peaceful and just responses to terrorism. You're working on those goals now. Is that correct?
Yes, we are. One of the things that has been so frightening since September 11th, I think, is people's fear to speak out about their concerns. I know when Barbara Lee, my congresswoman, spoke out, she received thousands of death threats. That is not consistent with the values that I hold as an American, and I feel like it's very important for us to all feel safe to speak about our concerns, our ideas, what we want to see happen, particularly now with the situation in Iraq, where part of the reason that the Bush administration doesn't want to deal with Afghan civilian casualties is they're concerned about setting a precedent before they go into Iraq, where casualty projections are much, much higher than we even saw in Afghanistan. And they're very concerned that when the American people wake up to understand that war doesn't just go after one, quote, evildoer, Saddam Hussein or bin Laden or whoever is the arch villain, But that it really kills ordinary families. It kills ordinary children.
That's the upsetting thing about how the media behaves. They speak about one individual, and we're talking about killing thousands of individuals. The death toll in Iraq is literally unbelievable as a result of the embargo and the constant bombing since 1991. I know I was in Baghdad with the peace group at that time, and I saw the importance of people being on the scene, and there will be more of our people in Iraq, especially if the war starts. The Voices in the Wilderness will be there as part of a peace team. And I don't think there's any substitute for that kind of witness, which is exactly the kind of witness you did in Afghanistan. Does your group meet regularly now?
We had our first in-person meeting last month. We had a retreat for many of our members. Because we're all over the country and we all have our lives to lead and we all have so much to deal with in the aftermath of September 11th and coping with this within our individual families. We do a lot of our meeting really by email and by phone. Many of us will be in New York on September 11th where we're hosting a vigil from the night of the 10th into the 11th. And then again, we will be getting together probably later on this fall around the anniversary of the bombing of Afghanistan. And also talking about no more innocent victims in Iraq and elsewhere. I just want to let people know that in addition to checking our website, they can look at unitedforpeace.org. A number of the events you mentioned in and around Los Angeles on September 11th are listed there, and if folks are going to be in other parts of the country, they can find out about events in New York and D.C., in little towns all over the country where people are saying no to more war and violence and yes to a world of peaceful tomorrow.
That's unitedforpeace.org.
Yes.
It's another website together with yours, which is peacefultomorrows.org. It has to be seen that peace is patriotic and that jingoism is not patriotic. Jingoism is in Webster's as a word which is called a militaristic patriotism. And a militaristic patriotism will lead to the end of the planet at this time. We cannot use the weapons we have. The world will not sustain them. Also, there's the question of morality involved here. And the constant what's called necrophilia or love of death that seems to be coming from high places, we have to focus on a love of life, I believe, instead of the love of death. I think it's marvelous that your organization exists. And do you have any other plans for traveling to areas of this kind?
Not in the immediate future. We've also traveled to Japan over Hiroshima Day and have been invited back there by people who have lived through and suffered the consequences of the atomic bomb in Japan. So we have strong ties with them. And we also may be going to India in November for the convening conference of the International Nonviolent Peace Force, which is something that our group is endorsing. So we hope to continue to build ties with people all over the world who know what it's like. We've been working with a group of Israeli and Palestinian bereaved parents for peace. These are people who all lost children on both sides of the conflict there who have come together to say, we don't want more war. We need peace in our region as well. And really, we feel like these are the voices that need to get out there, the voices of families who are affected when war and violence and terrorism occur, to say this is not the kind of world we want to live in. When we respond to violence with violence, we're just hurting more families, more innocent people. And, you know, where are our priorities? What is it that we want from this world, and how do we get there? And what is the mechanism to get there? Certainly, we can see from example that responding with violence is not creating a better world. It's just creating a more violent world in which more people suffer.
Exactly, and we have to look at the reality that terror is not just on the other side. War is terrorism by its very behavior. We look at the history of Indochina, the history of Central America. We see terror. Terror and war are synonymous.
I think about the children that I met in Afghanistan in the neighborhoods that were bombed who are so traumatized by the bombing, children who months later are still shaking, refusing to talk, one child who's 6 years old and refusing to walk, kids who are scared when planes go overhead, kids who are scared by loud noises. You know, you can see the terror in their eyes.
This is terror. There's no question about it. I'm speaking with Kelly Campbell, the co-director and Western U.S. coordinator of the September 11th Families for Peaceful Tomorrow. These are families who have suffered from the tragedy in New York and in Washington, D.C. of September 11th, 2001. And they responded to this by going to Afghanistan to talk to people who had been victims of terror over there. How's our time going, Evan? Well, I want to thank you very much, Kelly Campbell, and wish you much success in what you're doing. I hope our listeners will touch your website at www.peacefultomorrows.org, and we look forward to seeing you on September 10th, next Tuesday, here at the First Baptist Church in Los Angeles. It's going to be a great celebration. Regarding transcripts of this program or information about the music we have aired, please call the Office of the Americas at 323-852-9808. That's 323-852-9808. I want to thank my engineer, Eben Ray, and my producer, Lisa Smithline, and thanks for listening to World Focus. Here's a final segment of Fear, Fearing Fear, Fearing Fear. This is Blaise Bonpain.
When it seems each prophet that walked the world agreed, pick anyone that you please. They say invite difference, and away we'll surely veer from fear, fearing fear, fearing